Okay. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us. I just think there are a lot of things that are happening at this point in time. Okay, very good morning and welcome. So let's start over again. Good morning and welcome to Eagle FM. And thank you, Tate Frans, for handing over the mic on this side. It has been a little bit of, you know, trying to put it in right. So, but welcome. So our time is about 16 minutes past the hour of 8. And thanks for joining us. It's a Tuesday. We are choosing you, just as you're choosing Eagle FM at this point. So my name is Mike Oshaveli, and this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what's really going on in terms of business, economics, and political news. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear and a little witty sometimes, and always curious, you know, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines with me and get to the heart of the stories. So as usual, we go back into time, we go back into history and look at what happened on this day in Africa. So good morning and welcome to On This Day in Africa. And grab your coffee, your tea, and settle in. So we started off a little bit, you know, here and there, but let's settle in, let's relax, let's settle in, and let's take a stroll through the history together. Now, on this day, July the 28th, back in 1957, something remarkable happened in Dakar. That is Senegal. Now, political leader from across French West and Equatorial Africa came together and formed the Africa Regrouping Party. So Africa Regroupment Party, or the PRA. Now, these people had a clear vision. They wanted African unity. They wanted independence from colonial rule sooner rather than later. So, and they wanted the emerging African nation to work hand in hand. Now, the party didn't stay together forever, so it eventually broke apart as countries went their own way after gaining independence. But make no mistake, the PRA captured that powerful Pan-African spirit that was sweeping across the continent in the late 1950s. Now, moving to 1966, on this day, on this very day, Ghana made it official that the 1st of July was formally recognized as a Republic Day. Now, this wasn't just about putting a date on the calendar. So it commemorated the moment back in 1960 when Ghana became a republic under Kwame Nkrumah. And it stands as a proud reminder of Ghanaians' pioneering role in Africa's independence movement. So a real beacon for the rest of the continent. And here is one that might surprise you. This one might surprise you a little bit. Going way, 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 way back in 199 AD, Anno Domini. So we are going back into 19 to 119 AD. On July 28th, the feast day of Pope Saint Victor the First. Pope Saint Victor the First is celebrated on that day, on 28th of July. Now, Victor was born in the Roman province of Africa. So in an area that is part of the modern day Tunisia or Liberia or Libya, so around there. So, and here's the thing, he was actually the first African pope and bishop of Rome. So he is remembered for decreeing that Easter should be celebrated on a Sunday. So there you have it. From ancient Rome to the independence movement of the 20th century, Africa's fingerprints are all over this day in history. So thanks for tuning in to On This Day in Africa. Well, until next time. So stay curious, you know, stay always curious. All right. So it's Tuesday, July the 28th. And what is our thought for the day? So our thought for the day comes from an old African proverb. Okay, an African proverb. A king who does not tolerate comments about his mouth. A king who does not tolerate comments about his mouth should not eat in public. A king who does not tolerate comments about his mouth should not eat in public. Now, the proverb reminds us that if you choose to lead, to speak publicly, or to make decisions that affect other people, you must also be willing to hear what people have to say. You cannot expect applause. You cannot expect applause all the time. Sometimes there will be questions. Sometimes there will be criticism. And sometimes the truth is uncomfortable, you know. Now, whether you are a president, a business owner, community leader, or even a parent, so leadership comes with accountability. So if you cannot handle feedback, then perhaps you should not be in a position where your actions are seen by everyone. So today, instead of fearing criticism, ask yourself, what can I learn from it? After all, the people who challenge us are often the ones who help us grow. Well, that's your thought for the day, and let's keep the conversation going. So we're going to come back after this.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, welcome back. This is your number one talk radio station, your 24/7 talk radio station. So good morning and welcome. So we have the show packed, really, really packed this morning. So what are we looking at? So in a few minutes, we're going to speak to a legal practitioner from Oshakati. So there is a worrying claims that a higher court case had to be postponed because the accused were allegedly too hungry and too weak to continue with the trials. So we're going to go into this, asking what is the Constitution saying and what is the law saying about, you know, about this. So it will be, we're going to do that at 8:30. It's about just 6 minutes before we speak to our legal practitioner about that. So, and then over the past decade, Ongwediva has seen a dramatic slowdown in land and property development, evidenced by only 930 transactions worth of 485 million. This is a trend actually highlighted in one of our show by urbanist Francisco Neshila. So we're going to go into that. So what happened to my hometown? So that's what we're going to look at. That's what we unpack. And this is a story in yesterday's edition of The Villager. So we're going to unpack that. We're going to look at what happened to my hometown. So, and Minister Modesto Amtse has clarified that Namibia will pursue flexible negotiated ownership models, you know, rather than imposing blanket equity demands, you know, that could actually jeopardize the country's attractiveness to global investors. This is a different language from last year. All right. What has softened us? What has softened us? So we speak more softly now compared to how we spoke last year. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get at the bottom of that. So we're going to unpack that as well. So, all right. So good morning and welcome. So when we come back, let's try to get my caller and get into our first item on the show. So stay tuned. We're going to be back.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayaguro nirandito mwa yoe.
Longeshifa yoe okupikiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende kuinomeha uyo kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konara heta tuimu. Datu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. Good morning, Namibia, and welcome to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM, the show where we break down the stories that matter to everyday people, everyday Namibians. So this morning, we're talking about a worrying claims that a higher court case has to be postponed because the accused were allegedly too hungry and too weak to continue with the trial. So if those claims are true, they raise some serious questions. So think about it. In our country, in our own country, people who are still presumed innocent until proven guilty were allegedly too hungry to stand before a judge. So what does our constitution say about this? Does the state have a legal duty to feed people in its custody? Who is responsible for making sure they get meals? And what happened if that duty is ignored? Joining us this morning is Vilmarie Horn Bronkhorst, a legal practitioner based in Oshakati, who has extensive experience in our court systems. Vilmarie, welcome to the show and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
All right. Now, is it true that someone in a police custody has a legal right to be given food while they are attending a court?
Yes, definitely. Unconvicted accused persons who are in police custody have an absolute constitutional and statutory right to receive food.
Yeah.
The Namibian Constitution does not explicitly state that such a person has a right to food, but they have the right of to be presumed innocent in terms of Article 12. So while the person has not been sentenced yet, he is presumed innocent.
Mm.
And depriving them of food affects their right to human dignity, because this will amount to cruel and inhumane treatment, starving a person.
Yeah.
And then it further affects their right to a fair trial, because a hungry, weak accused person will not be able to give full attention to the court proceedings, to instruct a legal practitioner, or participate in his or her own defense. So yes, although the right to food is not explicit, there are other rights in the Constitution that definitely guarantees the right to food.
Yeah. So sometimes these may be certain things that are just expected to happen. Where does that right come from? Is it clear written in the law, or is it just something that is expected to happen? Like, it's a normal thing that is kind of like logistics thing that are expected to happen, or is that a right? Yeah.
Well, as I said, the Namibian Constitution enshrines the basic human rights in Namibia, your presumption of innocence, your human dignity, and your right to a fair trial. And then Namibia is also party to a few international conventions of your civil and political rights, your UN standards for convicted persons in prison. So there is definitely statutory and the Constitution as well, prescriptions on how trial awaiting accused persons must be treated and the basic rights they must be provided with while in custody of the state.
Mm-hmm. Now, if someone has not been found guilty yet, does the state still have a duty to look after them? I think you said in some conventions, or do some people wrongly believe? Because you have people who said, well, if somebody's guilty, this person haven't found guilt yet, but some people do believe that, well, some people wrongly believe that going hungry is part of punishment. So what do you think about that?
Well, a person that has not been found guilty yet, and in police custody at the holding cell,
yeah,
the Police Act 19 of 1990 stipulates that such a trial awaiting accused person is under the legal custody of the Namibian Police Force, and they have the statutory duty to care for these basic necessities like food and water.
Mm.
Some accused persons are also kept in the trial awaiting section of a correctional facility or prison,
yeah,
and then that duty falls on the correctional services. So overall, the ombudsman in Namibia is responsible to ensure that either the correctional facility or the police do their work and actually provide these basic human rights of food and nutrition to trial awaiting accused persons.
Yeah. So let's take, for example, someone. Let's take a day when someone have to go to court. You know, if someone is collected now from the police cells early in the morning, when should they have been given food?
So what usually happens is the accused persons are taken to the police vehicle waiting.
Yeah.
Between 7 and 8 in the morning, depending where they have to travel from, because some of them have to travel quite far.
Mm.
Then they wait in the police van and they miss breakfast. Especially the ones coming from towns more than 2-3 hours away, they drive earlier, so they miss breakfast.
Yeah.
There's no lunch provided by the police while they are in the holding cells. And most trials go throughout the whole day. You get your lunch break, 1 to 2, but then the prisoners the accused persons are kept in the holding cells during lunch.
Hmm.
And then when the court adjourns for the day, usually at 4 o'clock, but sometimes even later,
yeah,
they are then transported back to the police holding cells. And dinner is served usually between 4:30 and 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So by the time they arrive back at the holding cells, especially the ones coming from far, dinner has already been served and they go the whole day without food.
Yeah.
And you can just imagine we have trials set down for a week, 2 weeks. So those accused persons will only eat during weekends.
Mm-hmm. And during this whole process, who is actually responsible for making sure that food is provided? Is it the police, the prison service, the court, or is it someone else?
If a accused person is in a police holding cell, then the station commander of that specific police holding cell must ensure that the accused person gets food for the day.
Yeah.
If that person is in the trial awaiting section of a prison, then it's the correctional service that must ensure that food is provided to the person being brought to court. The court itself has no duty to provide food to a person appearing before it. So it's either the police or the correctional service where the person comes from.
Yeah. So even if the proceeding is going, it's going on for a whole day. So are the meal provided, or can the accused end up going hungry? What happened if now, let's say for example, if the court goes on for a whole day, so who then provide the meals? Is the court or still correctional services, a prison services, or the police?
If the court goes on for the whole day, it should be either the police or the correctional service, depending on where the accused person is detained, to provide food at court for this person who is detained.
Yeah.
It is not the court's duty to provide the food. So, yes, there is. I've been practicing now over 15 years, and it is very seldom that I see that accused persons are brought food during a whole day in court. So they would come in the morning without having eaten and proceed throughout the whole day without food.
Yeah. Now, if someone is hungry and weak during their trial, could that affect whether their trial, could that affect that they receive actually a fair trial? Would that have a bearing on their trial?
Yes, most definitely. A person who is hungry cannot concentrate. They are tired. So it would be difficult for a person with a diminished concentration to follow the court proceedings, to follow the evidence that is being given, and to give proper instructions to the legal practitioner acting on his or her behalf, and to actually fully participate in his or her own defense. So that definitely affects the right to a fair trial, because this person is weak and hungry and cannot concentrate properly.
Yeah. So the allegation now that these allegations now that we have here, if these allegations are true, do they point to one isolated incident, or could this be a bigger problem in our justice system?
It's definitely not one isolated incident. Like I said, I have been practicing for quite a long time. I do quite a lot of criminal cases, and especially legal aid cases. And you can see after lunch, here around 3 o'clock, the accused persons would usually lie on their arms. And I've always wondered why. And with this matter that was in the High Court, which was postponed for the accused persons to just get food, I realized they are tired after lunch, because then they've been going a good 5-6 hours without any food, probably more, because they would have eaten the previous day. So they are tired. They cannot concentrate. And I've seen this in all the courts, the magistrates' courts, regional courts, and the High Court. There is a bigger problem here. And I believe the Ombudsman's Office has already addressed this issue in quite a number of investigative reports. But it doesn't seem to reach a solution, or that anything is actually done about ensuring that accused persons who are in court, in custody of the state, receive food throughout the day.
Yeah. So you just mentioned that the Ombudsman has raised this concern.
about the food in holding cell before, but why does this issue keep coming up?
I really cannot say that. The only thing I can think, and I'm speculating here, is that there is a lack of resources to actually pack lunches for these accused persons to court, a lack of administration to arrange the bringing of food to court. So I believe one report says that insufficient food supplies in local police holding cells is a direct human rights violation.
Yeah.
So we would have to approach the Ombudsman's office to give more clarity on this and what was actually done after these investigations were done to resolve this problem all over Namibia, not only, for example, Oshakati High Court, but in each and every district and regional court.
Yeah. Some people, there are some people with this attitude where they would say, if they committed the crime, why should we worry if they miss a meal? What would you say to these people?
The majority of Namibians forget that every accused person has a constitutional right to be presumed innocent. So unless that person is convicted, this person is presumed innocent and remains a human being.
Yeah.
So whether accused or convicted of a crime, this person is a human being and requires the basic necessities to survive, being food and water. And a criminal, yes, we say they are afforded a lot more rights in terms of the Constitution, but a criminal or no criminal, every human being has the right to survive, to get the basic food and nutrition. So it is harsh to say that they're a criminal, they can miss a meal, they can starve. But that is inhumane. A criminal or not, it remains a human being.
Yeah. Well, since this seemed to be an issue that it's an ongoing issues within the justice system, can family member bring food to someone who is in a court, or are the rules are there rules that prevent that?
Family members can bring food to accused persons only at the police station or the correctional facilities at designated days and times. So a family member cannot bring food to court and ask that it be taken to the cells to an accused person, because the food that is brought is screened, it's checked, there's certain restrictions on packaging. So you will not get a family member being allowed at court to bring food to an accused who is in a holding cell. I have in the past, as a legal practitioner of an accused person, been able to give food for a person who needed to take his medicine, for example.
Yeah.
But you don't want a legal practitioner to be feeding your client, because that is usually also out of our own pockets. That happens in the exceptional circumstances. So, no, at court, a family member will not be able to bring food, only at the holding cell or at the correctional facility on the designated days and times.
Yeah. Now, let's say if the state now failed to feed someone in its care, this someone in their care, can it be held legally responsible or even be sued? You sue the state.
Most definitely. It again depends where the accused person is being held.
Yeah.
But let's take, for example, the accused person is kept in a police holding cell. Then the Namibian police and the Ministry of Safety and Security is responsible to ensure that that person gets food while awaiting its trial.
Yeah.
So not providing an accused person with these basic rights to nutrition and water, it leaves them open to liability of legal action being instituted, urgent applications, we call it the mandamus, to force them to bring food to these people. And should the person suffer any bodily damages, you can also claim damages. So, by not providing the basic human needs to an accused person awaiting trial, the relevant ministry, they makes itself open for legal action and claims of civil damage.
All right. Okay. Now, finally, what, in your opinion, what are practical changes would you like to see so that no one ever has to appear in court too hungry or too weak to stand trial again?
Well, it's actually an issue of logistics and administration.
Mm.
There are books saying exactly on what days the accused persons have to attend to court. So the previous day, the station commander must arrange with the unit commander for the following day just to pack the meals for the court day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. It doesn't have to be fancy food. Piece of pap or bread will suffice, at least if they get something.
Mm.
So if preparations are made the day before the appearance for the accused person, then the next morning before they travel, they can just grab a little plastic with the food in for the day and take it with the accused persons to court. And if they do that every day, there should be no issue with accused persons coming to court and not receiving food.
Mm. Velmarie, is there any things that maybe I haven't, you know, touched on or I didn't ask you that you think is deemed to, you know, to share with our listeners? Any last word or message that you would like to share?
Well, the only thing I would hope for at this stage is that the ombudsman steps in and not only investigates and writes reports, but actually takes action and does something about what's going on in Namibia. We have this mentality of doing investigations and forming committees in Namibia, writing reports and long documents, but no action comes out of it. So my hope is that the ombudsman would step in and really bring change to this practice of not feeding accused persons during their court appearances.
All right. Velmarie, thank you so much for taking time to speak to us on this issue and for your insight. I hope our listeners walk away understanding that feeding an accused person is not a favor. It is the law. It is justice. And it's simply the right thing to do. So we wish you all the best in your work. And thank you again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the call.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That's Velmarie Horn, the Horn Bronkhorst is a legal practitioner based in Oshakati, who we're looking at the issue of a higher court case had to be postponed because the accused were allegedly too hungry and too weak to continue with the trial. So, all right. So you're most welcome to come through and react to this. So very good morning. So good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
Who is saying what?
Yeah.
What?
Mm.
So let's thank God for, you say Anna?
No, Velmarie.
Oh, thank God for her.
Yeah.
And we are happy that you brought that issue.
Mm.
Yeah. It's good that she mentioned about human rights. Human rights is a very crucial issue.
Yeah.
And it has been in existence from since mankind came into existence. Because it is it's a natural law that is embodied into our heart, into our existence. It's a natural law. It's God's made law. and it's where all these human rights issues are actually discovered.
Yeah.
Even though we don't observe them sometimes, we don't respect them, we disregard them, you know. So the person or an accused person has got all other rights, just like any other person who is not alleged or is not accused of any other crime.
Yeah.
Therefore, their rights have to be respected. Of course, despite the fact that they have committed crimes, which is not only against an individual, but also against the society at large. And those conducts, that unlawful conducts, are not good. They harm people, they disturb people, they disturb actually the legal order of the society.
Yeah.
Therefore, of course, we, as much as we respect the right, and they should exercise that right, not to be denied of maybe food, food is a basic necessity, or any other. But they should also realize that they have committed a crime.
Yeah. So, and in this process, they are innocent until they're proven guilty.
Well, yeah. I understand that concept. You're innocent until you are proven guilty.
Yeah.
But how long does it take for us to find out, dig out the evidence of the crime that you are allegedly have committed? It takes long.
Yeah.
So it takes long, but that does not mean that you should deny you food while we are investigating the case.
Yeah.
Do you understand? But you are not yet proven guilty. Even if you are proven guilty, that's where I actually wanted to focus my discussion today. Not to before you are proven guilty and all this thing. That one is clear. It's obvious. I want to find out, my focus was on the after you are proven guilty, yeah. After you have been sentenced. You understand? That's my
yeah. Once you are sentenced, you go to prison, and in prison they feed you well. They feed you well in the prison. So
yes. That's where I want
even
to
even better than at some people who are homeless at outside.
That's why they sometimes they commit crime because they want to go and rest there and enjoy their food.
Mm-hmm.
But until you are proven guilty, but you know that you have killed a person, and all the grounds that are there on the basis that you have actually committed a crime, but you have not yet been tried or sentenced.
Yeah.
But are you still feeling guilty? You are still feeling. That you have not actually committed a crime because you have not enjoyed this other benefit and you have not enjoyed this other benefit. You understand? So after you are sentenced, you can still hold your human right that you are talking about.
Yeah.
But you have committed a crime.
All right.
You are sentenced.
Yeah. All right.
So those are issues that people need to look at it. So the crime that you have committed, not only against those people, against the society, and you have actually disturbed the psychological order of the people there.
All right.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you for coming through.
Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity.
All right. 08333-6691. 08333-6691. So, what is your reaction to this? As sometimes for us people, sometimes thinks, okay, well, we judge them. Once we hear you arrested, you know, we already judge you that you are guilty without going through the process. So our attitude is that why even giving food, you know? Why even giving food? So I think there's that misconception that we have, and
and every person have a right to have a right to. It's their right. It's within their right. You know, it's their constitutional right. It's a legal right that they are fed while they are still in the custody of police or prison services. All right. So, what is your take? What is your take? And she said this is something that is actually happening throughout. It's not. This is not a one-off incident. It's something that it really. It's more like a practice where people are being starved, and ombudsmen have also raised the concern about food in holding cells before, but there seem to be nothing is it's taken up seriously. So the other thing. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Big Mac, how are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
I'm all right, man.
Hmm.
What is happening in Namibia, man? Something else. I'm telling you.
Yeah, we are dying of a good news, you know. When we wake up one day and we kind of like, maybe when we produce oil one day, yeah.
Yeah, everything will be normal.
And even when we produce that oil, we have to think, to whom does the oil belongs actually, you know?
We go
back to Hage Geng, late Hage Gengob, who said, yeah. Well, it's not ours.
And he's saying nobody must feel left out.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when you look at our ombudsman, I think it's one of the weakest organizations to have.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, so many things are happening behind the custody of prison and the custody, you name it. But I'm telling you, we don't get much report ourselves. To get it the way we are getting from our brothers and sisters who are painted. It's totally different. That's why, my friend. But anyway, you can say maybe it's starting improving from one by one, since we have a celebrity. Celebrity, like a deficient one. At least there's a much improvement.
Yeah.
If you remember the other time people are complaining even about the mattress, you go there, this mattress maybe it's been there for more than 10 years.
Jeez.
And you wonder why we cannot even use the women's source of when it comes to prisoners. You talk about even coming up with a mattress, bed, you name it. Some of them, they are doing that, but we need in the big scale to show they can take care of themselves there. Even now you guys are talking about food. It is about to be first priority when you are transporting a person. Just imagine some of the cases are maybe a person that come from Leopold to come to Windhoek.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You are making that person the whole day without getting anything. Yeah? And they want to tell me that it's a fair trial. At the end of the day. It will not be a fair trial because that person is even chilling, sometimes even sleeping. What is ugly?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I think, really our ombudsman, they need to pull up their socks when it comes to this issue. You cannot take a person to go to court trial, but you are not feeding a person. That's why we have a free meal a day. Even though some of us will a lot. Yeah. But if a person who is very in need, they need to be provided food. First of all, before you transport a person, this person is about to be a great person. Doesn't matter with the early in the morning, even the person who is sleeping, the breakfast is about to be there. Lunch time, yes, provide that one. And remember one thing now, we have even like people are coming from as far as drugs.
Yeah.
Coming to window for trial. So you are keeping these people to be what? Hungry. At the end of the day, we are going to prosecute these people.
Yeah, even she even said that would constitute, that would also constitute that the trial was not fair if the person actually go through the process hungry, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I know that I just get just do whatever I want. I want to get out of here.
Psychologically, that's very important because if your immediate need it's food. You don't care about anything else, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's how we are as human beings. So, yeah, I think it's an issue that need to be addressed. So this is just an ice. What is that they called? This is just an example of many examples that are happening actually in this country. So it's only when it surfaced that we start to know, oh, this is what is happening, but. It's happening all over, as you said. This is an issue, you know?
That's why, but for me, I think they need to change the method. That's why I need to find this police. They say in prison is better than to stay outside, because there you are eating free food. That's why they are doing this. Secondly,
there's no way that I want to be in the prison than outside, you know?
Some of them prefer even there. I'm telling you, that's why you see the boys come out. When he leaves, he's saying, no, I'll come later. I'm coming. Nobody must listen to my face. I'm coming.
It can become a home. You know, that's something we can get used to. You know, it becomes a home to some people. If you, let's say, for example, you stay there for about 15 years or 20 years. So definitely that becomes a home for you, and the outside it doesn't appeal anymore.
Doesn't look good anymore. I like my friend. No.
So because you are thinking, let's say for example you're coming out and you are about 50 something, you are just a few years to retirement, you know.
Yeah.
First of all, you're not gonna go to any employment anywhere. Maybe your family, you know, depending on how many family that you have and what you did, you know. So, yeah, it can become a familiar place that you want to go back to.
I think I saw that the poster somewhere. This guy from America was convinced for murder which he didn't do. And they released him around, I think he was 7-something. Not mentioning 7-something, you are there in jail for nothing. A criminal which didn't commit. Now, the whole life of that guy is gone.
It's gone. Imagine. I'm gonna sue you for billions, not even a million. All right. We'll come back
no
after
matter
this.
Where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafaa sana naana longe shifaa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifaa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito mwa yoe yonge shifaa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konara heta tuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. Good morning, Namibia. So welcome back. You are tuning into Unpacking the Day right here on Eagle FM. And I'm your host, Big Mike, the man behind the mic. All right. So now you're still welcome to react to the interview that we had before, that we just had a few minutes ago. So you're still welcome actually to come through and react to that, if you'd like to. But we have to move on. So we go on now with the story. We're talking about the story about my hometown, Ongwediva.
All right. And I would like all the Ongwediva residents, you know, please put up, you know, a tune to, you know, increase that volume. Okay. Increase that volume. I want you to increase that volume and don't even move an inch. Okay. All Ongwediva residents, you know, don't even move an inch. Okay. And what I'm about to lay out for you this morning is not an opinion. All right. This is not an opinion. It's numbers, numbers, hard numbers. And those numbers tell a story that people of Ongwediva need to hear. All right. We need to hear these numbers before it's too late. Before it's too late, honestly. So this is a story in yesterday's edition of the Village by Hende Walenga. So in a spin-off, it's a spin-off from the Eagle FM Urwazi show with Francisco Neshila. So, yeah. Now, let's start with the bigger picture. All right? Let's start with the bigger picture. Now, over the last 10 years, Ongwediva has recorded 930 property transactions. 930 property transactions. That sounds like a lot, isn't it?
Event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
All right, just welcome back from that. Now, let's put that against Oshakati, all right? So let's also put that against Oshakati. So Oshakati, over 7,000 transactions worth 2.8 billion. Let me say that again. 7,000, 2.8 billion Namibian dollar. So Ongwediva is not even in the conversation. It's not even in the same conversation. So in case you didn't get this, okay? In case you didn't get it, Ongwediva has recorded the same period for these three towns. So Ongwediva has recorded 930 property transactions. So that means, you know, a piece of land, maybe someone bought or sold a piece of land or building in Ongwediva. So the total value is 485 million. Now, Ondangwa, where I am, you know, I'm jealous. Ondangwa is recorded 1,993 transaction, and that transaction is worth 1.1 billion. The same period. And Oshakati, same period, 7,000 transaction worth 2.8 billion. So think about it in this way. I want you to think about it in this way. If a property transaction were, let's say, for example, if it was a race. So now let's say for property transaction was a race. Oshakati has already crossed the finish line. 2.8 billion. They have already crossed the finish line. So Ondangwa is halfway there. Ongwediva is actually still, we are still tying our shoe lenses. We haven't even started running. If it was a race, it's like Ongwediva is still actually tying its shoe lenses. And that is when you compare with the other two, really. I'm shocked. I listened to the program a little bit. It was on Saturday, so when I have these programs, I was shocked what I was hearing. And when you compare with the other two towns, I'm really honestly shocked. This is not a small gap. That's massive.
And the question I think every Ongwediva resident should be asking now is why? Why is my town falling behind?
Eh?
While the towns right next to me, right next to my town, is moving forward. Well, there are some reasons why, and we're going to look into that. All right? Now, if you're following the story, if you read the story in The Villager, so here's where it gets a little, get a real painful, I think, for me. Because I'm talking about my town here. Now, let's track the decline year by year, okay? If you look at the decline year by year, in 2016, because we're talking about 10 years. In 2016, Ongwediva recorded 138 property transactions. Just see the decline. So, in 2016, Ongwediva recorded 138 property transactions. Not great, but not terrible, all right? By 2018, that dropped to 124. Well, still okay. You might say it's still okay. Now, we're still breathing, okay? We haven't saturated yet, okay? So, but then look at 2022. Look at 2022. The number crashed to 29. From 2018, 124, which we say, well, that was still fine. Now to 2022, the number went down to 29 transactions in an entire year for a town. And this is a town that's supposed to be a regional center, my friend. Yeah? And then 2024, 10, 10 transactions. 10. That is less than one per month. That's actually less than one per month. I mean, you could count them on your fingers and you still have fingers actually left over. Yeah? As July, as we're now talking, as July 2026, they have recorded 24 transactions. Well, which is from comparing last to 2024, which is a slight uptick, you know. But let's be honest, that is still a town. How do you say? It's a town on a life support. This is a town on a life support. Well, and what does this mean in a very simple language? What does it mean, really? And really being seriously. It means people are not buying land in Ongwediva. It means that developers are not building and businesses are not investing. Huh? People are not buying land in Ongwediva. They are not, developers are not building, and I think business people are not investing. And why? Eh? Why? When property transaction drop like this, eh? When it's actually dropped like this, it's like what? It's like a thermometer for the local economy. You know? The patient is sick. So the patient is sick and nobody seems to be rushing to the hospital. The patient is sick, but nobody's rushing them to the hospital. Eh? Why? That's the question. Why? Now, there are reasons. One of the biggest reasons, you know, one of the biggest reasons? Land is too expensive. Land is too expensive in Ongwediva, according to the article. Yeah? Land is too expensive. On average, land in Ongwediva costs 638 per square meter. Land in Ongwediva cost 638 per square meter. In Oshakati, if you compare that to Oshakati, in Oshakati, it is 450 per square meter. Ongwediva. Mudite go to 450 per square meter in Oshakati. So that is a difference of almost 200 per square meter. Now, if you are a business person, you know, someone who want to open a shop or build a warehouse or start a guest house, where are you going to? Eh? Where are you going to go? Where are you? I mean, are you going to pay more for land in Ongwediva? Or are you going to drive just 20 minutes? Not even 20 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. Just drive 10 minutes, you know, down the road and pay significantly less in Oshakati. The answer is obvious. And that's exactly what is happening. That is exactly what's happening. That's why there are no building, there are no developer building, there are no investors investing in Ongwediva. It's simple. This is basic economics. It's a basic economics, my dear friends. Okay? If your product is more expensive than the one next door and the quality is not clear, it's not clearly better, yeah? People will go to the next door. People will go to the next door. So, Ongwediva's land pricing is pushing investors away. Plain and simple. Yeah? Now, the town council need to explain. It really need to explain to the residents why a square meter of land in Ongwediva costs almost 42% more than in Oshakati. They need to explain that. I didn't even know this. I just, when I read the article, I said, no. I need to unpack my town, my hometown. So, why a square meter of land in Ongwediva costs most 42% more than in Oshakati? What exactly are you paying for? Because from where I'm sitting, the answer is not much. Eh? The answer is not much. That, I think, need an explanation. Eh? Now, and then there is the commercial vacancy problem. Okay? There's also those commercial vacancy problem. The shopping centers or the shopping malls in Ongwediva are underperforming. All right? They are underperforming. Actually, that's a polite way of saying it. So the blunt way, there are empty shops. Let's not even make it polite. There are empty shops. Yeah? There are businesses that are open and closed. There are spaces sitting vacant, collecting dust, not collecting rent. Okay? They are not collecting rent. They are collecting dust. And if you walk through some of those centers, you can feel emptiness. Eh? If you walk through some of those malls, you can really feel emptiness. A mall with empty shops is like a body with missing organs. Well, it can survive, but it cannot thrive. Eh? You understand? Now, Neshila, the urbanist who broke down those numbers on the Ural's show, pointed out that Ongwediva's commercial spaces need a revamp. And I think he's right. Okay? And I think he's right. But let me push this further. Okay? A revamp of the building. The revamp of the building is not enough if the business inside those buildings cannot survive. You can revamp the outside. You can put fresh paint on the shop. But if nobody's coming through the door, what is the point? If nobody's coming through the door to occupy that shop, then what is the point of revamping it? Eh? So the real question is, I think the real question is, what is Ongwediba doing to attract and keep businesses? Because right now the answer seems to be not enough. Not enough. And right now, that we are not doing enough. You know, including myself probably, because I'm a resident of Ongwediba. So I said to Ongwediba, Ileni tupuikineni. So now let's compare. Eh? Let's go to Ondangwa and Oshakati. Okay? The neighbors are eating. Now so meanwhile, Ondangwa and Oshakati are not waiting around. So these towns are not waiting around. Ondangwa is moving faster on a commercial and industrial property development. They are. And Oshakati has re-established itself as a trading hub, as a trading center in the north. So if you want to set up a building material warehouse, you know, the kind of place that, you know, that sells cement, bricks, iron, the stuff that keeps the construction industry going, you go to Oshakati, because that's where the people are, and that's where the demand is, and that's where the money is flowing. You understand? That's where the money is flowing. Okay, let me put it in this way. Let me put it in the way that makes sense to you. Now, imagine three siblings, okay? You have these three siblings. One is building a house. One is starting a business, and one is sitting at home waiting for something to happen. That is Ongwediba right now. No, seriously, that's Ongwediba right now. The siblings sitting at home watching others building their futures. Eh? The tragic part, Ongwediba has every potential. To compete. That's the saddest part. That's the tragic part. We have the potential. And that just tells you when you put the wrong people in positions, when you vote the wrong people. So we have the potential. We have the location. It has the location. It has the population nearby. It has the infrastructure base. But potential without action is just a fancy word for nothing. You can keep saying potential, potential, potential. Without action, it doesn't mean anything. So that's where we are. That's where we are. We are a sibling sitting at home waiting for something to happen. While our siblings are, you know, are planning their future. So now, some people will say, now, we have, I mean, well, okay, we can say we have something, like the trade fair, and you have people who say, you know, but what about the trade fair? What about the trade fair? In terms of that, we pull more people than other town, like Ondangwa and Oshakati. So, what about the trade? What about Ongwediba trade fair? Okay, that brings people. Yes, it does, and it honestly does. For 1 week, it brings people, but for 1 week, or maybe two, because some people may stay there for a little while. But and then what? The trade center is sitting empty for the rest of the year. It's sitting empty. So that is like having a car, okay? That's like having a car that you only drive on your birthday. You know, what is the point of owning it? You only drive this on your birthday, and it's the birthday only comes once a year. And Neshila actually made a sharp observation here. So he said a trade center that is only functional a few times a year is
is a sign of poor planning. We're going to continue on a trade fair after this.
Imba ya rire ombwa nai epetla weather ko ombunikiro ombe ombi hukusha onjiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no matha ko murungu wa indu weri rongere kusha umune ondengu okura ko imba ona ovyu ne ya peke ko gondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe to kwika ovingi no kukara no rupa ondando ya peke yokianja oshimariva o presente dano komyeve vitatu moshimariva o presente umurongo komyeve hambu umwe moshimariva o presente mirongo ivari na dano Pamiyevi amulongwa na vivari moshimarifu. Itororera ondengu chima yungura na wakove na wina onyano kife. Ashiesho imba yekupe oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maorongane no owie uhaka enina. Itako na wina rishangitha jinon.
Get social with us on a
So welcome back. Our time is about 30 minutes past the hour of 9. And disappointingly, that's not English, Mike. Disappointingly. It doesn't sound. Disappointingly. Okay, I'm going to use that. Disappointing. We are discussing my hometown this morning. And the numbers are not pleasing. The numbers are terrible, really. You know, and I was just talking about now the trade fair where we could say, it, hey, we have the trade fair. That has a great pooling. Yeah? So that pool much more people than compared to any other fair around the north. Yes, that's true. That's very true. And I was just comparing it to a car that. It's like having a car that you only drive on your birthday. So then what is the point of owning it? And Neshila made actually a very good point, a very good observation. And he said that, center that is only functional, a few times a year, is a sign of poor planning, okay? And he's absolutely right. He's absolutely, absolutely right. So think about it, okay? You have these massive facilities. This big space that could host events. It could host exhibition. I'm even giving them business. Exhibition, market, concert, conferences. Eh? All year round. I think they must give it to me to market. Eh? Okay, so I'm not trying to market you through now Eagle FM. So these facilities could actually host events throughout the year. Any event, exhibition, markets, you know, concert, conferences. As I said, all year around. But instead, it sit there like a. Have you seen a white elephant? You know. They sit there like a white elephant. A white elephant that the town still has to maintain. Now, imagine that's a white elephant that we still have to maintain, still has to pay for, still has to secure. That is not development. That is not development. That's a burden dressed up as an asset. So, And here's the thing about the trade fair itself. Okay? Yes, it brings visitors. Yes, it generates some economic activity. But if people who come for the trade fair, they look around and see a town with empty shops, expensive land, and no entertainment, are they going to come back and invest? Are they going to come back and invest? Are they going to say, I want to open a business here? Probably not. Yeah? The trade fair is a spark, yeah? But a spark that only fires once a year. I mean, cannot keep the fire burning, actually.
is not keeping the fire burning. So we can actually use that facility for many, many, many things. We can hold so many things throughout the year. But what we keep? We keep it, it's just sitting duck, waiting for August, for a week. All right? Now, there are other issues that also, you know, are discussed in the article. And let me explain something that, well, it might sound technical, but it's actually very simple, you know, rezoning. Okay. Many of you probably listen, but there are some listeners might not understand what this is all about. Now, the rezoning, this is when a town changes the rules about, what a piece of land can be used for. All right. So it changes the rule about what that piece of land can be used for. For example, if a plot of land was zoned for residential use, for example, okay, meaning you can only build houses on it, and the town rezones it for commercial use, suddenly you can build a shop, a restaurant, or an office, okay? Now, rezoning is how a town adapts, okay? That's how actually a town adapt. So it is how they grow. Now, it is how they respond to what people actually need. That's why you're rezoning. You know, it's mostly responding to what people actually need. So, Ongbadiva is averaging 12 rezoning applications per year. Yeah. 12 rezoning applications per year. 12, my dear people. That is one per month. For a town that is supposed to be developing, I think that's worryingly, worryingly low. Eh? That's worryingly low. And I'm, when I read this, I'm actually shocked. Eh? Absolutely shocked. It means the town is not changing. The town is not changing. It's not adapting. Eh? It's not responding to a new opportunities. It's stuck in the same gear. We are exactly in the same gear. Not even in a gear. We are actually in the new. We are stuck in the neutral. Eh? Doing the same thing while the world around us is moving on. Eh? It's moving on. 12 rezoning applications per year. They tell you that the town's planning machinery is either too slow, too cautious, or too rigid. Okay? That tells you one thing. Either our machinery, the town's planning machinery is really, it's either too slow, one rezoning a year, a month. Okay? That's too slow. Or too cautious, or too rigid, or too incompetent. and actually, none of those is good. None of those is a good thing. So, there's nothing we can pull out here now, really, that out of this article that make us feel, you know, I talked about, you know, at least about the trade fair, but still, Now, there are still some red flag nobody is actually talking about. There are some red flag nobody's talking about. So, and here's another red flag, as I said, that most people would not even think about. Right now, there is no active. Listen, this is according to the article, not according to me, okay? So I'm just as surprised as you. I'm just unpacking it. So there's no active environmental impact assessment, the EAAI, the EIA, the environmental impact assessment. There is no active environment impact assessment in Ongbadiva. So the assessment is basically a study that checks whether a proposed development will harm the environment. All right? Now, it's a legal requirement for big project. So you need that for bigger projects. When a town has active environment impact assessments, it means developers are planning big things. When it has that, it means now developers are actually are planning big things. Big project, new building, new infrastructure, new project. When there are no environmental impact assessments, it means nobody's planning anything big. As simple as that. Nobody's even trying. I think this is like a it's like a hospital with no patient in the emergency room, you know? Now, at first glance, when you know, at the first glance, you might think, ah, that's a good thing. Quiet, no problems. But actually, it means people are not even coming to the hospital anymore. People are not even coming to the hospital anymore. They have given up. They are going somewhere else. That's basically it. Now, no environmental impact assessments in Ongwediva means the developer have already voted with their feet. They have already voted with their feet. And they have voted Oshakati and Ondangwa. That's what they have voted. That's where we are, Ongwediva. Developers have voted. They have voted with their feet, my friend. All right? They have voted with their feet. And where did they go? Oshakati and Ondangwa. And it's obvious. It's obvious. The number shows that. That's what I keep telling you. Numbers don't lie. Now, there's also a hidden cause that kill investment. All right? A hidden cause that kill investment. So, and then there's this thing called fire pressure ranking. All right? The fire pressure ranking, I know, it also sounds technical, but stay with me because this affects real money. This really affects real money. So, Ongwediva has a moderate to low fire pressure ranking. Okay? What this means in a very simple language is that the town fire fighting capacity, okay? Now, the ability of the fire department to respond to a fire is not rated highly. Now, that's a problem. And when a fire risk is rated higher, insurance company charge more. You understand? When it's rated higher, insurance company charge more. Simply as that, if you want to open a business in Ongwediva, your insurance premium will be higher because the town's fire services are not rated well. So, so not only is the land more expensive when you compare it to Oshakati or Ondangwa, but your insurance cost, your insurance costs more too. The reason be, that is a, now you see, that's a double punch to your wallet and to the wallet of any investor anyway, you know? So, and you have to think about this from the business owner's perspective, Okay? Think about it from the business owner's perspective. Now, you can open in Oshakati, cheaper land, low insurance, more customers, more activities. Or you can open in Ongwediva, expensive land, higher insurance, fewer customers, empty shops next door. That's not a difficult decision, my dear. That's not a difficult decision. And yet, somehow, the people running Ongwediva have not figured out
that they need to change the math. They need to change the math. We're going to come back after this.
This winter, Washamba Mall is turning your shopping into winning. Spend 200 Namibian dollars or more at any shop in Washamba Mall, and you could win a 500 Namibian dollars shopping voucher every Friday. The more you shop, the more chances you have to win. Don't miss out. Visit Washamba Mall in Ondangwa from 3rd to 31st July 2026. Shop, enter your till slip with your name and number into the competition box located in the mall, and stand a chance to win a shopping voucher from Washamba Mall. Don't miss our lucky winner live draw on Eagle FM every Friday from 1500 hours.
All right, welcome back. So we're looking at my hometown, and and please make sure that you tune in to the Olwazi, the show that comes every Saturday, and also every Monday. It's a very, 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 very good show, very informative show, with Francisco Nashila and HT. So make sure that you tune in on Saturday before my show. It's start from 9, I think, to 10. Yeah, start from 9 to 10. On Saturday, and on Monday, somewhere in the afternoon. I'm not sure exactly what time. All right. So make sure that you tune in on the Olwazi show. It's a very, very, very interesting, about town councils, you know. So, yeah, as I said, you know, when you look at now, you know, Ongwediva, and you compare that to Oshakati, and if you are a business owner, you know, where do you go? Of course, you go to Oshakati. You can open, you know, Oshakati, it's cheap. What? The land is cheap. The insurance is low. There are more customers, more activities. Yeah? Or you can open in Ongwediva. So, expensive land, you know, higher insurance, yeah? Fewer customers, empty shops, eh? So as I said, and our people, eh? The people that are running that council, they haven't figured out yet that they need to change the math, really. The math has to change. Eh? It gotta change. So there are deeper problems. There are still deeper problems. Now, let me talk about something that is uncomfortable but necessary. All right? Or maybe not. Maybe not uncomfortable. But part of the problem is a communal land conflict. Okay? That's one of the problems. In the north, and this is not just in Ongwediva, you have a situation where traditional authority control communal land, and the town council want to expand urban areas. Now, these two systems do not always work well together. So in some situations, they don't really work well together. When there's a clash between traditional land rights and urban development plans, things get stuck. Things get stalled, you know. Projects get delayed, you know, investors get frustrated and walk away, and the town suffers, okay? The town suffers. So, and this is not unique. As I said, this is not unique to Ongwediva. It is a challenge across the northern Namibia. So, but Ongwediva seemed to be hit harder than its neighbors. I don't know why. There is a reason why. Okay, we seem to be hit harder than our neighbors. The reason be, I think that's a question the town council and the traditional authority need to answer, you know. They need to answer this together, eh? Not separately, really. They need to answer this together. Because while they are arguing, Ondangwa and Oshakati are building. They're building.
And we see that we are far, far, far behind in these 10 years. So what can be done? Maybe that's a question. So what is the way forward? Neshila actually suggested, Francisco Neshila suggested that Ongwediva should invest in recreational and leisure areas. Entertainment, tourism, things that make people want to visit and stay. That's where they need to invest. Eh? So they must take their suggestion. And he pointed to Swakopmund as an example. Yeah? He pointed to Swakopmund as an example, and there's a real merit in that. Swakopmund is not the biggest town in Namibia, but it has identity. Swakopmund has an identity. People go there for the beach. Well, maybe for the German architecture as well. Tourism, called there for German architecture. The adventure activities, there's also lots and lots of adventure activities. And the restaurants are also good there. So it has a vibe. Swakopmund has a vibe. So Ongwediva need a vibe. We need a vibe. Right now, it is, as Mr. Neshila put it, you know, operating without bones. So we are operating without bones. It has no structure, no identity, no pull. Eh? But let me be honest with you, okay? So I think building few recreation areas is not going to fix the fundamentals. Okay? From my opinion, it's not going to fix the fundamentals. We need those, okay? But it's not going to address really the fundamentals. It's not going to fix the fundamentals. Ongwediva need to address the land pricing. Something that has been highlighted as expensive, we need to address that. Land pricing, it need to make it cheaper and easier for business to set up. That is the way to go. It need to fix the fire pressure. We're talking about the fire pressure ranking. So that insurance costs can come down. If we don't fix that, then the price of insurance goes up. And no business would, you know, take that. Yeah? And the other thing we also have been talking about is rezoning. So it needs to speed up rezoning. How can you have rezoning? One application in a month. It needs to speed up rezoning that time that the town can adapt. So our town need to adapt. Huh? So, and we're talking about dispute, land dispute, between town council and the traditional authority. So it need to find a way to resolve communal rent dispute faster. So, and the other things that we have is the trade fair. And I think it needs to, that trade fair center work all year round, eh? Not just 1 week in August, that it work all year round. And these are not suggestions. I think as citizens, as residents of Windhoek, I've been there for years. So as residents of Ongwediva, these are demands, isn't it? Eh? Because the people of Ongwediva deserve a town that works. We deserve a town that works. We deserve a town council that fight for investment. Eh? Not one that watches investment actually walk away. We deserve leaders who look at the numbers. Eh? Who look at the numbers, the number we discussed this morning, and say, this is unacceptable. And it's unacceptable. So we need change. Yeah? We need change. So what do you think? What is your take? Our telephone number? We're coming to you live from Ongwediva. from Ongwediva, from Ondangwa. So, and we're coming to you live. Our telephone number is 08-333-66091. 08-333-66091. So, we need change. So, what do you say?
Omudiha kutekirwa kaguna I Madina omjo chikao shafasana na na longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene anageshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika zeitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupipiramo Eagle FM Media House ngwe 20 memeha uka kombanga nina Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konora hita tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oni aj. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good morning to you and to welcome. Welcome to Unpacking the Day, and we are unpacking my hometown, Ongwediva. So where are the Ongwedivas? Where are you? Where are you? So let's bring this to a close, all right? 10 years ago, Ongwediva had 138 property transactions. Last year, it had 10. All right? You see the decline? So that is not a decline, actually. That is a collapse. Eh? That's a collapse. So, and if nothing changes, the next decade will be worse. It will be worse. What is suggesting that there's something changing? What we see is just that, you know, we're declining. So the town will die. Ongwediva is too big, too important. Yeah? Seriously, it's too big, too important, too central to the north to simply disappear. Yeah? So, a very good morning.
It's Ongwediva.
Man, disappointing.
It's not disappointing. It's not really disappointing.
The numbers are terrible. Honestly. Yeah, no, this is honestly. I mean, honestly, the town hasn't done. When you look at this, when you compare on Ondangwa and Oshakati, we are far away. You know, we went down. Yeah.
When Tata Nesila was here, we had a very serious conversation, and you also heard about baby part of it.
Yeah.
I was also disappointed.
Yeah, it's really disappointing.
I was asking you about Tata Nesila, about the sports facility.
Yeah.
Because when I throw, I just came to know with Diva from this corner shop.
Yeah.
This is my end, before that time is Hanover has actually started developing there.
Mm.
And even that Nisira also affirmed that. But when you look at these things, Ongwediva has been populated with the so maybe rich or I don't know the kind of people that have been there.
Yeah.
Even in terms of housing, I mentioned it to Mishira that that's also not a really big problem. Mm. But then we should also expect some kind of, you have got a university there, this is there.
Yeah.
And some of this is due to...
No, the thing is this, Uncle Bona, the thing is that we're looking is that those things were, there was a point when we were real, the growth, the development was actually taking place, even at the faster place. But since 10 years, at, when you compare now 10 years with other, we haven't grown, you know. We haven't developed, there wasn't any, the transaction actually went down. Huh?
We're supposed to have like guava trees. Those years, because before I left Namibia, I was only Osagati once. But I know Ngwediva, my family members there, those many years.
Yeah.
Even guava, just guava. Talk about the tourist attractive area, so to say.
Yeah.
Sports. It's only the school who have got sports teams and the UNAM. The community infrastructure for community kind of, I don't know how you call them, maybe it's relaxation centers and whatever, they are not there.
Exactly.
So if you do not have those things, and many kind of events are taking place in Ngwediva, recently, Mwespandeka or whatever, had some kind of school competition and all these things.
Well,
only the school sports.
You know, things are happening, but when you look at in terms of a bigger project, as you compare with other, when we're talking about now bigger project, you know, building a project, a capital project, we come to a standstill.
Let me tell you a short story, personal story. There was time when there were national elections, and I was doing a research on the local governance and structures and things like that.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them, Opuo, Edith, and Ngwediva was part of them. And I was having a letter from the Minister of Local Government and Housing. It was so discouraged.
Yeah.
I don't know whether there's the political or administrative issues or whatever, and they are not attracting this kind of investment like other cities. Recently, I was reading in the newspaper here some billions of dollars in Ondangba and things like that. Where do you go for a park, for example, where you can say, let it make it a kind of a sort of a monument or whatever, where is it?
Yeah.
When people are developing, the stakeholders, and because the needs of the community are already there, whether you did the research or not, the needs and the concerns of the communities are there. You know already that these are the people, and you remember you are also moving people away from those things, making it as a town. But a town which does not even have those kind of facilities,
yeah.
What kind of a town is that?
Yeah, no, it's really disappointing, you know. Looking at these numbers, it is disappointing.
And crime, you know, Ngwediva is rampant. Maybe it's good that you are going to see some city, what is it, city police or whatever, getting their food in. There's nothing. So those needs that the possibilities and the for development that the Patenesila has identified and all these things, can't we also team up and put some parks there? It's only
it's not even functioning as a park anymore. It's not. It's not even function as a.
There, I was looking at some new structure and I said, is this a people going to make Rapana here? Or who's owner is this one? And this has been there, you know, in the, under the tree where the people are staying there. Where are those facilities? We make sure that, see, those people are there, they are staying, just need to organize them and make sure that they put some order there and everything. We have the local market going on. Maybe there, closer there, there's also some kind of a space And I'm sure if it's not on already, you can also convert it to like a small kind of children's park or whatever. I don't understand what is happening in Ongwedila.
Yeah, no, just watch out, Uncle Bwana, just watch out the next election, local election. I can't let my town go like this.
Thank you, God bless.
All right, man. So, if my party is not putting me there, so maybe I must stand as an independent candidate or something. We can't let Ongwediva go down like this. All right, so yeah, if we're not doing anything, so seriously, as I was saying, Ongwediva is too big, too important, too central, you know, to the north. To simply actually disappear. Of course, it's not going to disappear, but, you know, to become insignificant when it comes to, you know, development. So, and it will shrink. If nothing changes. So it will become a dormitory town. You know, those dormitory town, a place where people sleep at night and leave during the day to work and shop in Oshakati and Ndongwa. That's why we are, you know... That's why we are in Ondangwa. Yeah? You sleep there and you just come. It's become a dormitory town, you know. You come, you shop and work in Ondangwa and Oshakati. So, and that is not a future. That's not a future. That is a surrender, seriously. So I'm asking every Ongwediva resident, every business owner, every counselor, every traditional leader who is listening, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? That's my question. What are you going to do about it? Because the numbers are clear. The numbers are very clear. The trend is clear. We can see also the trend. So the only thing that is not clear is whether anyone has the courage to turn this ship around. Okay? So is there anyone who has the courage to turn this ship around? So, 08-08-33-66-091, 08-33-66-091. So you're welcome to come through and have your react. Where are the Ongwedivas? Ongwedivas, where are you? Where are you? This is what happening to your town. What happened to your town? Eh? What happened to my town? 08-333-66-091. So come through and have your say and have your reaction on that piece. So when we come back, so we're gonna look at our next story. Very interesting one. We're gonna look at who really owns Namibia's riches? That's what we're going to look at. Who owns Namibia's riches? We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa letu. Moambo, dengera selma, konarahe tatuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace. I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically, specifically any event that you wish to broadcast on a wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ripurane ngeno wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano
they will come and propose to you that now they're only going to give you what 200,000 including the trees and whatever. But just maybe 200, what am I going to do with the 200,000?
Yeah.
And on top of that, the everybody they are going to sell, they are going to have to sell it already 500,000. One. 500 there, just imagine, especially when it comes to companies. People are aware, that's why now the land, if you remember, the ink of Namibia is selling to Chinese trade without to Helena Fit in world.
Mm.
This is what's the issue. Because Helena Fit comes to you. Even now, if you go to like a place like Honga, especially the.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those are. Just you are having like a land near to the road, they are selling one by one. Individual people. Some are even asking like a 40,000, 50, you go out, it's up to you.
So they are doing that before the demarcation of the town.
Yeah, exactly, before land of it comes. When it comes, they're already done with them.
Yeah.
And that is already going to what? Conflict of interest when it comes to town.
Yeah.
Because that time, they're earlier away. Are putting up home. Maybe you want to demarcate a hospital or you want to demarcate a stadium or even factories.
Exactly.
But people are putting up because now you are not compensating the people the right amount.
Exactly. That's exactly happened. What happened to Ongwediva. So when I think there was a time when this whole thing was not gazetted in a government gazette, and then before it was gazetted, now the people they started actually selling. And that's actually destroy or disturb the plan of the town of the town, you know.
Yeah.
So now to remove those people, it's gonna cost you money, and if you look at how, for example, Omatando, they were also talking about Omatando in the show. It's absolutely how it's anybody's built anywhere, and it hasn't got an order, So, and it's very difficult now to move people because you have to pay them, you know, to move them.
Yeah.
So it's a really a mess, you know, compared to Oshakati. Oshakati move people and then put them somewhere and then start developing areas where they move, you know.
Then they put people in Oshana.
Of course, they put people in Oshana.
The thing is that when looking at our town, the problem is that sometimes I think they have to work in hand with what traditional, whether you like it or not.
It's supply and demand, mister. It's supply and demand, you know. You don't care now. They put you in the Oshana and you think you need a house. You just take.
And And the thing is, the thing when you look at the number, like our town, why they are not really growing, is that sometimes when you bring all these services, you need to start imagining something new.
Yeah.
Look, if you look at the Elana feeding, yeah, we are licking a lot of fish. You talk about the recreation park which we don't have. You talk about even a cinema. Most Elana feeding is a big town now. You talk about even like a gym. There are things like that. Nothing. Apart from that, you can even put a storage. Cold storage. Yeah, because you know, on that, people, truckers are coming.
Yeah.
And they are wasting their paperwork maybe for even a week sometimes. Just sending those cargo. And the diesel are going because now we have to keep it the cooler landing.
You can even put a storage of Ngungula.
Yeah, exactly.
Gungula storage.
It's what I'm telling you, with, no, guys, people who are having money, they cannot sing. We don't have money, we are singing, but there's nothing. There's no way nobody can assist you. And this is the issue which we are having in our country. Now, we have a lot of it, hostel are there, school are there. Now you are putting up accommodation for who? Who's going to afford to land in a flat? If a lot of people are not working. So you have to start thinking of like there was a plastic packaging, one of Fatima, what Fatima will take or something.
Yeah.
And it cost, but I don't know why Lana Fitch cannot revive that. Because he was making, you know, this plastic. Plastic crafts, even a lot of near now it was landed by I think by Pakistan. Machines are there, everything's there. People who work there, they are there with their experience. And now the thing is shut down. Because you remember a lot of foreigners when they come to Namibia, they aim it was a target of Angolan because of American dollar. That's why you see those companies of selling cars across because Angolan, they don't have money anymore.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to take advantage of that. Because that company, we can still arrive and then we still continue the way it is. But I have a friend, Oshimari Shota, she was the one.
Yeah, you sound a little bit far now. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. And now, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh yeah, that's something now very hard because now if you look at the scandal, that some women cross shop at them to cross because there's no more American dollar the way they use buying power. No more there.
Yeah.
About Ngula, who's keeping Elana Fiti land?
Yeah.
Serious. Otherwise, if it was no Ngula, what else? You know, Angwena. Apart, maybe, and then there were a few people who are working like teachers and nurses, police. But from there, what else Elana Fiti did to bring some, to remember the town? It's what I'm telling you with that Pakistan manufacturer of plastic. They're supposed to come up with something.
Yeah.
Don't just build a town, but you really don't have any backup to give employment for people.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while. It's gonna take a while.
My, you guys, the way you are, even you are saying even the Israel is up.
Yeah.
That is a problem with
already. It's a problem, definitely.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm telling you, you can, because this is the same like the way we are buying cars, and they will tell you no, because you are taking out insurance, and they will tell no.
Yeah.
In the north, it's very high risk. Then we're like, come on, high risk, there's not even much a lot of cars there, come and take it off.
When I read an article, I realized, woo, there are a lot of things that I never pay attention to, you know? and are very important information, seriously. Yeah.
Very much. Because just imagine now, you have to think about even the insurance when you are buying a house there. The land is already expensive. So And that is why people can have a lot of options to go to Ashakati and what, and that one, because they skip.
Yeah, and there's no reasons why the land is more expensive, in Ngwediva than in Ashakati. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing now. I think because of this beautiful house you guys produce. And now we are having lots of people, rich people, which are having complaints and you name it.
You know?
Those nice flats with their landing. But anyway, when you look at them within our areas also, there are a lot of things which are telling you it's going down. I don't know, maybe because of a change of what leadership, people who have been there. Oh, how? Well, Ngwediva used to be one of the toughest towns. Every time they were overwinning, they were local authorities over there.
Yeah, I think we need to look at, we need to come up with a different system of selecting leaders, especially local town councils, you know. We need people that understand development, that have a broader understanding of issue, not only from political point of view, but have understanding of I would love to say business and economy. Not in terms of or having a master degree or a PhD, but someone with a basic concept of what it means to develop a town. You understand?
Because people who are no practical, they are not giving a chance. And we are learning the theory. That's how we want to work. That's the problem I think we have. Anyway, Mike, let me give other people a chance.
All right, thanks for coming through. All right, 08333 66091. We're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. A very good morning to you. And when we come back, we get into our third story that's very, very, very interesting as well. So stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM,
no matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, good morning, and good morning, Namibia. Good morning, my dear listener, wherever you are listening us from. All right, welcome to Eagle FM. So sit tight. I want you really to sit tight because we're going to talk about who owns the gold under our feet and the oil off our coast. That's what we're going to look at, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be easy, but it's going to be tense. Maybe not. Okay. Now, over the weekend, our Minister of Mines and Energy, Mr. Amte, said on a TV program and said something that made a lot of people pay attention. All right? It also made me pay attention. Well, in a simple word, he said this. Namibia cannot just walk up to these big investors. Listen. He said, Namibia cannot just walk up to these big investors and demand half the company or more and expect them to still come. Do you understand? So he said, well, we cannot just walk up to these big investors and demand half the company or more, like 51%, and expect them to still come. You understand? Like what maybe we are learning here. We are learning from Starlink. Eh? So because in his word, my simple version, okay, exploration is basically gambling. That's what he said. So exploration is basically gambling. These companies are putting billions of dollars on the table, not even knowing if there's anything down there worth pulling out. Okay? So, if we make our rules, I'm still explaining what the minister said, that if we make our rule too tough, they will simply pack and go. They will simply pack and go, dig next door in Angola or Botswana or wherever the deal is much sweeter. Okay? So that's what the minister said. So we cannot, we have to understand that they are putting, apparently exploration is basically gambling. So this company, they are putting in billions and billions of dollars. They are putting billions of dollars on the table. And they don't even know if there's anything down there worth pulling out. He's right though. But do you realize that the language is changing? Okay? So, today, we unpack this. What is really going on here? What is really going on here? And the big question, is this government protecting us? Now, the question is this. I want you to think, you know, is this now government protecting us? Or is it going soft? Are we going soft on the very people who came to take our resources? Are we going soft on them? Let's dig into it. Let's dig into that. Okay? Okay. Now, first of all, what I'm going to do now, because these are very important jargon, okay? Big words that are being used, okay? Let's first break down the fancy terms, because if you don't understand the words, then you can't tell if you are being fooled. You understand? So if you don't understand the words, you really can't tell if you are being fooled. All right. So let's look at those words that has been used. One is equity or ownership stake. Okay? And we're going to put it in this context. Now, that just means how big a slice of the cake you own, all right? And if a mine is a cake, let's now take as a mine. If a mine is a cake and you own 51%, you own the bigger half. So you control the show, all right? So you control the show because you own the bigger half. Now, the 51% local ownership, so you will thank me by explaining this to you, because we will come to it. The reason why I'm doing this, because there are things that we're going to talk about. Now, the 51% local ownership, this was the idea, I think, last year. Okay? Yeah, it was last year. When was Ethete was sacked? Yeah, it was not this year, last year. I'm confused. Yeah, it was last year. So this was an idea last year that Namibians should own the bigger half of every mine. That was the idea. Sound beautiful. I remember even Mantume was celebrating. Was celebrating about this. Okay? So we'll come back to what it cost, to why it actually caused chaos. Okay, we'll come back to why it caused the chaos. All right. So then you have exploration, the exploration is, this is now the searching stage. And I'm mentioning this because we're moving on different stage. So before anyone make a cent from oil or from mine, a company spends a fortune drilling holes, testing rocks, you know, mapping the ocean floor. And most of the time, they find nothing. Most of the time, they find nothing. That's why the minister call it gambling. All right? Now, remember the words of the minister that we looked at the beginning. That's why minister called it bank gambling. So, then you have the free carry arrangement. Okay? The free carry arrangement. Now, this one is clever. Okay? This one is clever, and listen carefully. Now, it means the government get a slice of ownership. The government get a slice of ownership without putting in its own money. All right? We get, and this is what actually NAMCOR get. Much of NAMCOR what get is what we call free carry arrangement. Okay? So, that means the government get the slice of ownership without putting in its own money. So the investor carry our cost. Yeah? So it's like being made a partner. It's like made being a partner in a shibin without buying a single crate. You're a partner in a shibin, but you haven't bought any crate at all without buying any single crate. Now, you just get handed the share. You are just handed the share. So, our state oil company, NAMCOR, hold this kind of free stake in the oil blocks. Okay? So, now, and then you have the final investment decision, the FID. Now, this now the moment of truth. The FID is the moment of truth. It's when the company stop talking and stop studying. They stop now talking and stop studying and finally say, yes, we are spending the billions. Let's build. Let's build. And no FID, no oil. Simple as that. If there's no FID, if there's no final investment decision, that means there's no oil. Nada. All right? So, and then the last word, the last phrase probably is the ultra deep water. Ultra deep water, the oil off our coast. Now, let's give an example. You have I searched that up and they make a reference to like Venus discovery. Okay, the Venus discovery is buried underwater so deep. So deep, it is some of the hardest and most expensive oil on earth to reach. You understand? So that matter, and I will tell you why later. Okay? I'll come back to that. Now, okay. Now, that we all speak now that we all speak the same language. Now, let's get critical now. Okay? So let's get critical. Now we understand all these terms. All right. Let's look at the story behind the story. Okay. Here's what really happened. And this is the part the headline doesn't tell you. So, and this is not one story. You know, remember that this is not one story. This is a U-turn story. Eh? A U-turn story. Rewind to the last, let's rewind to last year. Okay, let's rewind to last year. The previous minister, Mr. Ithete, stood up at the, you remember, he stood up at the big mining expo. It was a mining expo and said Namibia would push for the 51%. Do you remember that? He said, he stood at the expo, mining expo. It wasn't a mining expo, I remember that. And he said, Namibia will push for that 51%, Namibia owning the majority of every new mine. That's how it was. As I said, Mandume was very happy about that. And do you know the reasoning? Honestly, I think it's hard to argue with the dream. It's really hard to argue with the dream because our minerals should make Namibians rich. Our minerals should make us rich. Not just foreigners flying in and flying out with our wealth in their suitcases. It should make us rich. So I think it was hard to argue with that dream. You know, we all kind of like excited. Wow. Okay, that's great. But watch what happened next, okay? Because this is the real reason, because this is the real lesson, okay? Now, the ministry, the mining industry, when that was announced, the mining industry didn't just complain. The market actually reacted. The market reacted. The Chamber of Mines let it slip up that some Namibian-linked company listed all the way over on the Australian Stock Exchange got temporarily suspended for trading. Just when that was announced. So in a simple term, when the investor hears 51%, some of them got so nervous that trading in those shares had to be frozen. So that it has to be frozen. So that is not a small thing. It's not a small thing because that is the market actually saying, wow, wow, is Namibia about to change the rules on us? So that was a reaction. So is Namibia going to change the rule on us? So it got so tense. It got so tense that the chamber couldn't sort it out with the minister. At that time was Itete. So they couldn't sort it out with the minister. So they went over his head. They went over his head straight to the president, President Natumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah. They went to the president herself. So, and by September, if we remember, by September, the president had to personally calm everyone down and tell them, relax, relax. That 51% thing was never official government policy. That we became confused. What? You know, I remember us discussing it at one point and said, what? We thought that was a policy. So the president came out and said, well, that 51% thing was never officially a government policy. Now, think about that. I want you to think about Namibia. So a minister announced something big at a national expo. The market panicked. And the president had to step in and basically say, ignore him. So now that tells you there was actually a confusion at the very top about our policy actually is. There was, because the president came in, step in, and basically said, well, ignore him, and eventually actually sack him. So eventually she sacked him, you know. And now, let's come back. I'm just giving you now. I'm putting you into a context. That's where we came from. And now, this weekend, the new minister, he's not new anymore, but I'm just comparing to Itete. So the new minister comes on a TV with much softer, calmer message. Okay, well, we will negotiate. We won't demand. Those are the words now. You know, we will negotiate. We won't demand. So the language has changed. Okay? The language has changed. So what we are really watching is the government quietly walking back on a bold promises they made. They're walking back from that bold promise. So the question is, The question is whether they are walking back from a mistake or walking back from a courage, Which one is which? So, now, I'm going to put both sides on the table, all right? I'm going to put now both sides on the table for you to think about. So, the minister's side, and in an inverted comma, be realistic, the be realistic kind of argument, okay? Now, his point is that you can't eat. The point of the minister is that you can't eat a promise. So you can't eat a promise. That's why I said they're walking away from that big promises. And then you say, well, you can't eat the promise. What he's saying is that mine you own 51% of, but that never get built because the investor maybe ran away because of that. Is worth exactly nothing, zero. So he said, well, you can make that promise and you can say you own 51%. Once you say that and then the investor ran away, you actually has got nothing. Yeah? You exactly got nothing. You got zero. So that's the thing. No, the 51% mathematically is that the 51% of nothing is nothing. Now he's saying better, you know. So now he's saying, you know, better, he would say, to own a smaller slice of a mine that actually operate. So the other one, the investor anyway, you own a 51%, but there's no operation. So now they're looking and said, well, it's better you own a smaller slice of a mine that actually operates. One that gives real jobs, real taxes, real royalties, than to own the majority of an empty hole in the ground. That's the language. You see how the language is actually changing. And you remember that that free carry idea I told you, okay? The free carry idea that I told you, plus the law that say government ownership grow over time. The law that said the government ownership grow over time until we eventually own 100%. So now he would argue that that is a smarter, a patient way to get the whole cake in the end. Yeah, that's actually a smarter way. He said, well, that's a smarter way and a patient way actually to get the whole cake in the end without scaring anyone off today. So today, let's not scare off anybody. So we have this smarter way of, you know, in the end, we're going to own that 100%. Now, but we're going to push back a little bit. Okay? Because, well, that's what I do. Okay? That's what I do here. So, question number one. Okay? So we're reacting to the ministers, you know, what the minister have actually said. Now, investor will run to the neighbors. That's what the minister said. Okay, if you push too much, you know, if you put your local ownership too much, too higher, you know, the investor will run to the neighbors. They will run to the neighbors. Now, my question is this. Now, investor will run to the neighbor. Is that true or is it a threat we have been trained to fear? Is that true? Or is that actually a threat we might actually have been trained to fear? That if you say no, well, the investors, they will run to the neighbors. They will run to the neighbors. And here's the thing the men of street must understand. I think you and I should understand. You cannot move a mine. You can't move a mine.
You can't, no, the copper is where is the copper is. It's not going to go anywhere. The Venus oil is off our coast, not in Angola. So when the resources is, let's say for example, when the resources is a world class, eh? Investors don't run away from tough times so easily. Because, okay, this is a tough time, we're running away. No, they grumble and they negotiate. They grumble and negotiate. So, now we must ask, okay, we must ask, is there, they will leave, now that inverted comma, that they will leave, that they will leave story, is sometimes used to make us accept less what we deserve. So we kind of like, okay, you got to agree to this because they will leave. And that actually a story that sometimes used to make us accept less what we deserve. Just think about that. Okay? Think a bit deeper. And think a bit critical. All right? Now, my question number two. What does negotiate actually protect us, protect from, what does negotiate actually protect for us? Now, the question I'm asking is this, okay? Is negotiate actually protect for us? Is that a protect for us? So to say, okay, we negotiate. Negotiation happened behind, most of those negotiations happen behind the closed doors. Now, wouldn't be, what is more transparent is actually to have a fixed rule. Yeah? If you based on negotiation not, we don't know. A fixed rule, like 51%, is at least transparent. I'm not saying now it should become 51%. I'm just giving an example. 51% is transparent. Everyone knows what is to expect. 51%. But a deal cut in a boardroom, that depends entirely on how tough and how clever our negotiator are. So how tough and clever are they? And whether anyone is watching them. You know, is there anybody who's watching? Yeah. So, but a fixed rule is actually transparent. Yeah. So, Namibia, who is checking that we are not being outsmarted by companies that negotiate billions-dollar deal for? They negotiate this for a living. Yeah. Who is watching? Who is checking? Who is checking that we are not being outsmart by the companies? So, and then we come say, oh yeah, no, it's 10%, it's 5%. We're just being outsmart by the company. Yeah. So that's also one thing to think of. So when we don't have that fixed rule, and we kind of getting into this soft language of negotiation, rather than in demand, because that's what now the new minister is now. This is what we were like bold last time. We were bold. No. Any new mining that's coming now, we demand 51%, and then we go through a metanoia, eh? We go through a metanoia. What happened? Now we kind of like, okay. Yeah. So think about the things that I'm asking. And I think this one is a big one. That they talk about that government own 100% eventually promise. That's kind of eventually promise. So that 100% eventually promise, kind of a promise. Now, when is eventually? Okay? When is eventually? Because in the resource business,
eventually can mean after all the good stuff is already pulled out. So, yes, now you can own it. Eventually, now you can own it, but all good stuff are gone. There's always, these resources are finite. Yeah? They are not unlimited, they are finite. So when is this, you know, eventually? Yeah? If we only get full ownership when the mine or the oil well is nearly empty and worn out, then we have inherited an empty shell. Eventually. So I want to know the numbers. That's what I want to know. For me, I want to know the numbers. So after how many years and how much oil pumped, you know, before that ownership actually shifts to us. That's what I want to know. So what do you think? Now, the minister dropped the headline that that will get everyone talking. Okay? That really will get everyone talking. He thinks that final investment decision on our oil, the yes, let build it moment, could come in just a month or two. All right, because the last quarter, more or less the two last quarter of the year. So this is where now some of the companies have actually, you know, we have forecasts to, let's say, say probably by the end of the year, we will have a here we go in football. And in oil. Now here we go in oil, in oil sector. So, and if it does, first drop of Namibia by around, you know, 2029. Namibia, if that is true, I think if that is honestly true, that is massive. That's gonna be massive, and that's potentially, and I'm saying potentially, the biggest thing to happen to our economy since independence. That would be the biggest thing happen to our economy since independence. But okay, and hold on to your seat. Hold on to your seat. Hear the careful little words the minister used. He said, if we agree on a commercial terms, hopefully. So some of us listen, you know, we scrutinize the language. So if we agree, you know, on a commercial terms, and hopefully, if we find each other. So that's also what the minister said. If we find each other. Those aren't the words of a done deal, you know? If we find each other. So those are not the words of a done deal, that the deal is done. Those are the words of negotiation that could still fall apart. Yeah? If, hopefully, you know. So it means the negotiations are not, the deals are not done. The deals are not done. So don't spend your oil money in your head just yet, okay? Don't spend your oil money yet, okay? Just hold on. Just don't spend it yet. All right? So, and remember what I told you about that ultra deep water business, the Venus discovery, is in some of the hardest, most expensive water on earth to drill. Okay? So that is exactly why these companies are, and this is the most important thing to understand. So that's why these companies are hesitating and squeezing on the terms. So it cost them a fortune to get that oil out. So they want to give us as little as possible in return. So I was talking to somebody. He's a very expert in oil thing. So, one thing he said, the real tug of war happening right now, this now. So the thing that's what happening now is that they want to give us as a little. Remember, as I said, this whole question of ultra deep water, okay, the businesses. So what it means is that they spend on this kind of discovery is in some of the, it's one of the hardest and most expensive water on earth to drill. So these companies now, because of what probably they're spending on that, the cost, as I said, it costs for them a fortune to get that oil out. So they want now to give us as little as possible in return. And that's the real tug of war happening right now. Every extra penny or every extra percent that we fight for, they push back. because their costs down there are really brutal. The cost is really, really, really brutal. Now, so here is the tension. So here's the tension in one sentence, and this is what he said. Okay? He said, and that makes sense, and think about this. All right? So he said, the deeper and the harder the oil, the more we need the investors. You understand? The deeper, the harder the oil, the more we need the investors. But the more we need them, the weaker our hand at the table. And they know it. That's why you end up with small percentage, 5%, 10% of the share. So you understand that. So what all this mean for us? And for us now, ordinary Namibians, what does it mean, really? And that's why I'm always here. That's what we're looking at. What does this mean? Now, it means this whole debate is really about one question. Will this oil and these minerals, the new that are coming up, the critical minerals and all that, so will this oil and this mineral change your life? Will it change your life? Or just change the lives of shareholders? And shareholders are not in Namibia. They are in London. They are in Paris. They are in Sydney. So which one is which? Will this oil and these minerals change your life? Or just change the life of shareholders? Because to be honest, we've seen the movie before. So we have just countries that are... we have seen this movie in Africa before. Okay? So we've seen it on the continent before. Countries strike oil. We have countries that strike oil. Everyone celebrate. The flags comes out. Flags comes out. And 10 years later, the ordinary people still poor. The ordinary people still poor. The roads are still bad. Okay, I'm not talking a country in particular. So, the roads are still bad, and the wealth vanished into a small pocket at the top. And you know how that is called? You know how that is called? It's called the resource curse. And it's real. It is real. So the owner fight. So the ownership fight, it does matters really. The ownership fight is really matters. But I will tell you what matters even more. And nobody's talking about it enough. all right, is that it is not just how much, as we've seen from other countries, it's not just how much we own. You can own actually 51%. It's not just what we own. It is what we do with what we own. What do you do with what you own? That's the most important thing. Yeah? You could still own 30 or 40 and still do amazing with that debt. But you can still own 31, 51% and still, you will still have still ordinary people that are still poor. You still have a bad road. You still have, you know. So it's not just how much we own. It is what we do with what we own. Of course, you can own 51% and still have the money disappeared if there is no transparency. Yeah? If the contracts are secret, if we don't hold our leaders accountable to where the royalty goes, we may get royalties and all that, but where does the royalty goes? If we don't hold them accountable, then 51% doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. So, Namibia, here's where I live. Here's where I leave you today. So, and I want, you know, so the minister is telling us to be realistic. Don't scare the investors. Okay? Don't scare the investors. Okay? Maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. A real mind beats an imaginary one. So the real mind would beat the imaginary one. But being realistic can also become an excuse for accepting craps, you know, or scraps. So you tell me, was the 51% idea a bold move to protect Namibian that got killed too quickly? Maybe we killed that idea too quickly. Or was it a reckless promise that nearly cost us the whole game? Well, think about that. When a minister say a big policy, eh? when a minister say a big policy, the market panics. So the market panics, the president has to correct him. Does that make you feel our government has a clear plan for our resources? Or are they still figuring it out as they go? Because it looks like they are figuring as they go. Because that whole thing shows us that they are not. There are no clear plan for our resources. And it's what, and that's the problem when you don't have a policy. Yeah? And the one that keep us, that keep me, let me say that keep me, I think keep me at, wake up at night, even if the oil flows in 2029, do you trust that the money will reach the street of Katutura? The money will reach the street of Rundu and Gobabis? Or will it just be another party for the connected few? All right. So that's where we end. The rocks and the oil belong to all of us. Namibia, they all belong to all of us. So we are allowed to ask the questions. Okay? So we are allowed to ask the questions. So this has been Unpacking the Day. And it has been a pleasure being in your company this morning. Let's do this tomorrow again at the same time, from 8 to 11. So from me, Mike Oshaveri, I'm going to leave you in the good hands of my colleague in Windhoek, Abigail. So from me, have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful day. So goodbye.